Morning, Mr. Chair and members of the commission. I'm David Whipple, Hunter Education Division Manager, and I'm here to talk to you about a proposal to modify some of the Hunter Education deferral rules today. And before we get on with that, I'd like to just take a couple minutes and give you some background on the Hunter Education program in general. Much of this you already know, but we require Hunter Education for Washington Hunters born before 1972. Born after 1972. And we certify about 13,000 students a year, and as you know, it's all delivered by volunteer Hunter Education instructors, and we currently have about 950 of those folks around the state helping us teach. A little bit about the division itself. We've made some recent investments in staff over the last few years, and we're up to 11 people. About seven of those are focused on Hunter Education, and both from the management and administration standpoints, but also obviously customer service is a big deal. Instructor support is probably even bigger, and part of that instructor support is we have a pretty significant warehouse function providing supplies to those instructors. Perhaps most importantly is we now have six field coordinators, one in each region, and not all of those folks are full-time, and they also, some of them also do volunteer coordination work, and so that equates to about four FTEs of Hunter Education coordination in the region, which has made some significant improvements over the last few years. And these are some of the metrics that I track in terms of the number of instructors, and these numbers again are from 2013 to 2015. We've had a significant increase in the number of instructors certified. The new instructors coming on board has gone way up. Just in 2015 alone, we certified over 100 new instructors. We're up to over 27,000 volunteer hours donated in 2015, and all of that really equates to a pretty significant increase in the number of Hunter Ed classes that are offered, which then results in a decrease in what we call the no-show rate, and those are students that sign up for classes and then don't show. If classes are readily available, that tends to decrease the number of no-shows because people aren't fearful of not getting into a class. A lot of people register for more than one, and then they just kind of pick the one they want to go to. So we've seen a pretty good decrease in that rate as well. So on to the deferral program. So the program began in 07, authorized by statute and rule, and it really authorizes a one-time pass on Hunter Education training, and it's good for one license year. So the purposes of it are really kind of to try it before you buy it, which is really important for those folks that are maybe on the fence about whether or not they want to hunt, and they all of a sudden just kind of want to get out there and try it with mom or dad or whomever. And it was also implemented to reduce or eliminate a perceived barrier to hunting. Back in 07, many states did that. I think we've come a long way in Washington in terms of increasing the number of classes that are available, and I think that barrier has greatly reduced. But nonetheless, it's perceived by some folks that that's a barrier to get into hunting. So the deferral program is there to help that out. Fall classes can be particularly difficult to get into. It's the peak time, obviously, in terms of licenses and people in the field. It's also a time when Hunter Ed instructors are trying to get out in the field themselves, and they're trying to balance their passion to teach and their passion to hunt. And so if you're a member of the public and you're waiting too long to get into Hunter Ed, you might have a hard time in the fall months. This deferral program can help get those folks out in the field for at least that 1 year. And then many, many other states have similar programs. So a little bit about the requirements for the deferral program. If you're the deferred hunter, you have to be at least 10 years old, and you can't have failed a Hunter Ed class in the prior year. And some requirements for the accompanying hunter is who we call basically the mentor or the supervisor. They have to be over 18, they have to be licensed to hunt in Washington, and they have to have held a Washington license for the prior 3 years. And then while they're out in the field, there's a requirement that they have to maintain very close supervision of the deferred hunter, and that they can only supervise one of those folks at a time. So a little bit about the numbers and trends. It varies from year to year, but averages right now 840 deferrals each year. Again, the peak is in the fall months. And significant numbers for 2015. We were at our lowest number of deferrals ever since 2007. And from 2013 to 2015, we saw about a third, 33% decrease in that number. 2013 happened to be a pretty high year, and 2015 was the lowest. And so we realized a pretty significant decrease. And we're not getting near as many complaints about I can't find a hunter ed class, and last year was the first year that the director's office did not receive any of those complaints either, which is a really good thing. So the proposed rule changes that are in front of you are largely administrative. There's no policy, there's no substantive changes that are being proposed. We're proposing to eliminate some outdated administrative processes. And really, the changes will improve customer service a great deal, make it easier to get a deferral, not so many steps, and it'll also save us some money in the process as well. So all really in the name of customer service. Some of the benefits that the customers are going to see from these changes are a much easier and faster application process. Right now, they download a form from the internet, they fill it in, they print it, they fill it in, and they mail it in with their check for the deferral application fee. Or they walk into the Olympia office and do it all by hand. So it's pretty cumbersome. We've got to rely on the mail service, etc. They're going to see a decreased time to actually obtain that deferral, because what we're doing is we're setting up an email account. So I can download that form, fill it in, email it, the application form, email it to the Hunter Education Division, and then we start the process. We don't have any mail time. We're also eliminating the, we're allowing them to call in over the phone, call into licensing and pay over the phone with a credit card instead of having to mail a check or stop by and deliver a check or cash. So they can also, when they call licensing to purchase or pay their deferral fee, they can also purchase a license at the same time. And they can also purchase they can pay their fee over the phone, but they can also pay their fee for their licenses at any dealer, not just as it is right now to the licensing division. And we're also proposing to eliminate the actual deferral card. It's a credit card style card that we print for every deferred hunter, and they're required to carry that in the field. And in today's day and age, there's no real need for that. Their hunting license signifies that they are in fact a deferred hunter. So if they're contacted in the field by enforcement, it's on their license, it's in their wild profile. Everybody knows what's going on. There's really no need to spend the money and have them carry that card in the field. And then if they lose it, then they're required to get a replacement, and all the time delays that go with that. So we think it's going to improve customer service a great deal. Some of the major agency benefits are, in the fall, we get a lot of people walking into the Natural Resource Building. They're driving from Seattle just to get their deferral. They're not going to need to do that anymore. So that's a big plus for them, but it's also a big plus for us. The application form is going to be typed instead of handwritten, so there's going to be a lot fewer errors in entering all that information into the databases. Again, we're going to reduce application processing time. We won't have to handle cash or money, both from the Hunter Ed Division's perspective and from the fiscal office perspective. We're going to not mail out hard materials anymore. Everything is going to be electronic. So we will send them an email saying that they've been approved for, they meet all the requirements and they're approved to then obtain their deferral and buy their license. And then those, the materials that we send with them, and there are a few pieces of paper now that we send with them, those will all be electronic as well. So we're going to save a lot of time and money. And ultimately, if they can call up licensing over the phone and pay their fee for the deferral license and buy their license at the same time, we may see an increase in licensing, license sales. I'm not saying it's going to be significant with 850 deferrals a year, but there, you know, we could help with the situation of people now buy their or pay their application fee for the deferral, and they sit on it, and then they change their mind or they forget or whatever, and they never buy their license. So there's a potential benefit there as well. So in a real general sense right now, this kind of outlines the number of steps that you could count in terms of what the customer has to do to get the deferral and then what we do to process it. Under the current system, the worst case scenario, depending upon how you characterize the system, customer might have to go through about 8 steps to get their deferral. And those 8 steps are probably not very pleasant. And then we have about 6 steps that we have to go through to process that, get them their deferral card and all that. So with all these little administrative changes, we're down to 4 steps for the customer. Those 4 steps are greatly improved in terms of a lot quicker and they're a lot easier. And then the number of steps that we're going to go through is cut in about half, and those steps are a lot easier and faster as well. And a little bit on the public comments for the rule proposal. We received 44 comments. 77% were either in favor of or were neutral, and 23% were not supportive. Of those that were supportive of the changes, which was 54% were pro, obviously they hit on, make the change, it makes good common sense. Streamlining and cost efficiencies are always good. Customer service improvements are wonderful. And the 10 folks that did not support the change, basically I think 9 of them felt that the deferral program should be eliminated altogether because all first-time hunters should go through hunter ed and firearm safety before they go out. And then 10 of those commenters also, they had no comment or they did not support hunting in general. And so given the importance of the deferral program and what it means in terms of potential hunter recruitment and the fact that the deferred hunter is supervised and there are requirements surrounding them as well as the accompanying hunter, the supervising hunter, we're not proposing any adjustments to the rule proposal as it stands right now. So just a quick summary. Again, no policy changes, no substantive changes to the actual program. There's a couple, 1 or 2 administrative processes that are outdated and not needed anymore. And really, this is all about improved customer service and reduction in agency staff time. And that's all I had for you today. If you have any questions.
Thank you. I have one, Dave. First off, the photo of the youth with the grandfather turkey hunting, I was there when that photo was taken.
Oh, nice.
There were 5 of us, and the 12-year-old's the only one that got a bird.
So. Very good.
Well-deserved bird, too. I think what you do is critical to helping ensure the next generation of hunters be safe and ethical is critical to our mission, and so I compliment your division. Just a broad question that I don't go into too much depth on it, but I'm just curious in your kind of gut reaction. Looking at overview of hunter of the youth going through hunter education today, what's one thing that makes you the most optimistic and the most, I wouldn't say pessimistic, but worried?
I think on the optimism side, I think Washington has an outstanding hunter ed curriculum and program. It's high quality. They learn a lot when they come through it. We have the traditional classroom course that is really good for the younger kids, and then we have the online class that's coupled with the field skills evaluation, the in-person. So we're meeting demand on multiple fronts in terms of, you know, the traditional class is great for younger kids. Anybody can take any class, but the classroom course is great for the kids. The online class is really being effective at teaching. We have a lot of instructors that were really hesitant about the online class, and rightly so. But what we're seeing is a lot of instructors, once they try it and they see the quality of and the preparedness of the students when they come into that class is a lot higher than they thought. So I think we are being effective at teaching the curriculum and creating safe and legal and hopefully ethical hunters. My biggest fear is really recruitment, and we're beginning to develop a hunter recruitment retention reactivation plan for the agency, and that's my biggest fear. There's a lot of distractions. A lot of life has changed for this current generation that's coming up, and they think and look at things a lot differently than we have in the past. And so, capturing those kids, so to speak, at a young age and getting them engaged in outdoor recreation. Hunting, great, but outdoor recreation is probably more important. I think that's probably our biggest obstacle.
Yeah, I encourage you to keep pursuing that. And I know the good work that Habitat's doing with Penny, and that, you know, to help your thoughts, because you're on out there on the field or in the field, you know, with the next generation of hunters. So as you see these concerns, to raise them, because you're absolutely right, recruitment is an issue across the country, and that the whole North American model is floating.
Right. So,
well, thank you for your good work.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you. Just a quick question: is the supervising hunter have to stay the same through the season, or could it be a dad in one day and a grandfather the next? Or
that's a great question. We get asked that, and so on the application form, there is a designated accompanying hunter with all their information and all that kind of stuff. Now, when we issue their deferral or we field phone calls from folks that have that question, the law, there's nothing that prohibits a different accompanying hunter. And in fact, enforcement, if they're contacted in the field, have the ability to look up to make sure that all the requirements are met. And as long as the requirements are met, i.e., the deferred hunter has applied and is in possession of a deferred license, and the accompanying hunter meets the requirements, then there's no issue.
That's great. I have a 17-year-old daughter who would never hunt. As hard as I tried, she never wanted to hunt. And through her research on what's good for her to eat, she now will only eat the elk or deer that I get. And so, and so I said, well, you know where that comes from, don't you? And she, about 2 weeks later, I want to go hunting with you. So I'm like, this might work out.
There you go.
The omnivore's dilemma.
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
Very encouraged by the deferral program. Personally, I would get voiced frustrations with the inability to find a course, as you say, at crunch time, right before the fall seasons. So this is a great safety valve that allows people to get the experience. And I've heard very good comments about that, and has created some relief for all the pressure and demand. Great customer service device, and as you said, your complaints to the office as they've been eliminated. So terrific program.
Thank you.
Anything else? Not bad for a guy from Michigan State.
There you